Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Vanguard is working hard to balance opportunity and risk for investors in this time of volatile yields. We know financial advisors are working hard to do the same. Visit vanguard.com/fixed income today. Important information. All investing is subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. Bond funds are subject to the risk that an issuer will fail to make payments on time and that bond prices will decline because of rising interest rates or negative perceptions of an issuer's ability to make payments. Vanguard Marketing Corporation, distributor.
The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Wow.
Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki season 2 is
marvelous.
Great. And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. Spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki season 2. Now streaming only on Disney Plus.
You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com.
Hello and welcome to Absent Minded. It's over. It's over. The top 25 under 25. Patrick and Anton can rest.
I was going to say, I've already rested for a week or so. You know, it's more for Pat's sake.
Yeah, Patrick's been handing off a lot in the last week to me, and I'm perfectly happy to take over a few of these podcasts in the top six. That was Anton Rasgard. I am Jared Book. Also joining us today is Matt Drake. And if you haven't already guessed, as we've gone through 41 ranked players, there's one missing, and it's Sprague Ribbonsoin. No, it is. That's an inside EOTP. I mean, if you've been around EOTP for a while, you know that joke.
I was just going to say, like, I bought a reverse retro jersey this year with Ribbonsoin and number 91. Obviously number 91 because his father, the unsung hero Larry Ribbonsoin, had number 19, so he had to reverse.
Yes, of course.
I don't know why you're calling it a joke, man. Sprague Ribbonsoin is the most real prospect in the history of prospects in hockey, so... I take offense to the fact that you're considering this a joke.
He still has a Twitter account as well. Someone has made him a Twitter account.
And the crazy thing is that this is his 15th year in the top 25 under 25.
Yeah. How long have you guys been around for that?
I've only been around 7 years. Okay. Sprague is from before my time. So yeah, it's been a while.
How long has Matt been around? I don't even know that.
I have been around for too long. I've been around since 2012. So I was here when Sprague first came onto our radar.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny because at the Bell Center this past year, in the press box, the places near the center of the ice where I usually sit is it right across from the Ring of Honor or whatever they call it, Builder's Row, I think is what they call it. And right across from where I was sitting one game was Sprague Cleghorn. And it made me think of our friend, Mr. Ribbonsoin, in there. But yes, enough beating around the bush. Number one, Nick Suzuki. Not really a surprise, I don't think. I think it always was going to come down to whether it was Nick Suzuki or number two, Cole Caulfield. But for the second year in a row, Nick Suzuki is the number one player on the top 25, under 25. What are your thoughts on the process and Suzuki being number one?
Well, I mean, it was unanimous, which I mean, last year it was almost unanimous. I think we had one holdout that ranked him third. But this year, obviously, he got unanimous and it's deserved. I mean, he's a ridiculously good hockey player. He's getting penciled in by some people as a possible alternate for Team Canada at the 2022 Olympics, which is wild because that team is going to be unbelievably stacked. So the fact that they would even talk about him as being maybe an alternate that might, you know, travel with the team and not necessarily play, but just the fact that they're even considering him for that, it speaks volumes of, you know, what he's shown to people around hockey in general, right? That pundits are considering that, because that team's going to be wild. So if he's even an alternate for that team, it just goes to show what he's done in just two short years in the NHL. Ridiculous season from him, even better playoffs. This is a well-deserved number one. It's an obvious one. And he's number one in another way, too, this season. He's going to be the number one center. So we're going to see what he's really made of for sure.
Yeah, I mean, like last year, it was a debate whether him or KK would take the number one spot with Nick Suzuki getting his first time. It was basically since 2019 was the last year for both Jonathan Drouin and Max Domi to be eligible for the list. It was, you know, going to be crowned a new hero, a new number one, and it came to be Nick Suzuki. I don't think anyone on staff had Kotkaniemi at one. Maybe one had, but it was still, you know, when you see this season and you see, not to think too much about Kotkaniemi now that he has already left the organization, but you see that there is a more polished game in Nick Suzuki, and you can see that he develops for each year. I remember all of his power play goals that he had this season towards the end as well, like when he found his spot on the power play. And it's just like, because he's always been a slick playmaker, but just adding that that shooting aspect as well to his game will be really fun to look forward to, especially since he's probably going to be paired up one way or another with number two on this list, Cole Caulfield, and that can be really fun for a lot of years to come.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned his playoff. He was the top non-Tampa Bay Lightning scorer in the playoffs, tied with William Karlsson for sixth, which is kind of crazy that the top five scorers in the playoffs were all Lightning players, but that's another story. But yeah, you know, Suzuki was... There's always these questions. I think that, you know, it's kind of funny because when he was first acquired from the Canadians, I think a lot of people were like, oh, they couldn't get Cody Glass. And now I don't think
wasn't the story as well that the Canadians asked about Cody Glass? Like, I don't know if that was true or it was just a rumor, but that Vegas said, hell no, we're not going to give you Cody Glass because he's our most well-touted prospect and we want to keep him and we want to keep Brännström. But Suzuki, yeah, could be all right.
Yeah, I think that's probably, I think there was rumors that was the initial ask, think, yeah.
Maybe it was a Jedi mind trick and he's like, we really, really want Cody Glass. And then they were like, no, we're not giving you Cody Glass. All right. Well, I guess we'll take Nick Suzuki.
Well, I mean, if they had loved Nick Suzuki so much, they would have taken him at six that year in the draft. So like there was a reason why they chose Cody Glass first. So yeah, obviously none is left for the Vegas Golden Knights right now out of their first round picks from that year. So
yeah, because Glass got traded for Nolan Patrick, right?
This summer.
Yeah. if I recall correctly, the knock on Suzuki back in that draft was the typical one, which was size, which is kind of ridiculous when you think about
skating
it now.
As because, well, I think.
Yeah, and the thing about that is, number one, let's start with the size. He's got pretty good size. I mean, he's 5'11", and he's over 200 pounds, so he plays a pretty thick game. He's hard to knock off the puck. And let's talk about the skating, right? He doesn't look like he skates that fast, but he does. He doesn't look like he skates that fast because when he has the puck, he changes pace and he, like, you know, adjusts his speed a little bit to kind of throw defenders off. So he slows the game down at will. He's actually a pretty fast skater. And in my opinion, anyways, I think he's one of the better skaters on the Habs roster. I'm not going to say the best because they've got some speedsters like Byron and Anderson that can really fly. He can't beat one of those guys in a straightaway race, but he uses different types of tools in his skating that I think got him overlooked as well, in addition to the size aspect. But the fact that he can put all that together with his puck handling and his passing abilities is really what makes him an excellent player. And I think that he just kind of got overlooked in that draft. I don't think it was just the Habs. I think a lot of teams overlooked him. And if they had to redraft, I think he's probably going top five in that draft, I would think.
Yeah, sure. I would yeah. think so. You look at the top end of that draft. I mean, you know, I don't even think you would take Nico Hischier or Nolan Patrick. Hiskinen, Makar, I think those two guys are at the top of any redraft. Pedersen as well. But then you have Cody Glass, Elias Anderson, Casey Mittelstadt, Michael Rasmussen, Owen Tippett, Gabriel Vilardi, Martin Nietzsche. I mean, most of those guys, other than Nietzsche, I mean, they've done practically nothing in the NHL, right? After Pedersen. Pedersen was 5, Glass was 6, and then you had Anderson, Mittelstadt, Rasmussen, Tippett, Vilardi, and Nietzsche. I mean, there's no doubt Suzuki goes ahead of those guys. And then if you look at guys who are drafted behind them, there's no one really that sticks out in terms of top prospect. I mean, you know, Jason Robertson was a second round pick, but even then I think Suzuki's ahead of him. So yeah, you're looking at a definitely, I would say top three or top five, top four for sure. Right. I mean, Heiskanen, Makar, Pedersen, Suzuki, I think are the top four guys from that draft. And you can argue about the order for days on end, but I think those are the four that you're going with. Because I think that Suzuki's ahead of Hischier, definitely ahead of Patrick. And, you know, the other guys, you know, Suzuki is put up better numbers and Nietzsche is good, but not Nick Suzuki, right?
Is Suzuki better than Drake Batherson?
Is that a trick question?
Well, he had 53 points in 99.
Yeah, you know, Batherson's a good player. You know, he was obviously a later round pick in that draft as well, I think.
Fifth round or something.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think Batherson is definitely into the top 10 maybe of a draft, but yeah, I think Suzuki is. I mean,
I was just, the only reason why I was asking was because I was looking through the entire draft and he's the only one that's really, he's the only one that's really performed out of the second round, like second round and like later. The only guy who was drafted after Suzuki who has more points than him to date is Robert Thomas, who was drafted in 20th. Yeah. And he has played 40 more games and he has 5 more points. So
he also has a Stanley Cup. So,
I
think if you would have asked me 2 years ago, I think Thomas probably would have been ahead. But I think at this point, it's pretty clear.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, that's normal as well in a talent development. When you're like 20 and 22, it's normally a big difference. There should be a big difference.
Yeah,
you should have more meat on your bone when you're 22 and you've established yourself in the league. Then you know more what kind of player you could become and what you can be moving forward.
Yeah, in fairness to, I mean, you know, other NHL teams, when Nick Suzuki was first in the top 25 under 25, he was 5th, behind Max Domi, behind Jonathan Drouin, behind Jesperi Kotkaniemi, behind Ryan Poehling. And he beat Kotkaniemi in the voting this year. He beat Poehling in the voting this year. He would have beaten Drouin and Domi in the voting this year if they were eligible. Obviously, they're older. But I think that they're, you know, there aren't that many players, you know, let's put it this way. If you're looking at the Montreal Canadiens at all, whether you're looking at top 25 under 25 or over 25 or whatever, there's no one you take over Nick Suzuki, I don't think. You could maybe argue Jeff Petry, maybe. But I mean, yeah, there's no question that Nick Suzuki is the best player on the Montreal Canadiens right now. I mean, you can argue maybe Gallagher if you want to, you know, take somebody from the team. But I think in terms of skill and youth and potential, it's without a doubt Suzuki. And, you know, for me, the whole Suzuki Caulfield debate is like a better version of Gallagher Galchenyuk. Right, because you have the winger who scores goals, a little undersized, and you have the center who is a number one center or expected to be a number one center. But I think that Suzuki is a better player and prospect than Galchenyuk was at his age, even though Galchenyuk had that 30 goal year. But and Caulfield, I think, is a better prospect than Gallagher. I'm not saying he's going to become a better player in Gallagher. I think he probably will be, but at least as a scoring way winger. But I think that it's just an elevated, you know, Gallagher was a fifth round pick. Cole Caulfield was a top 15 pick. They're not the same. And you can argue that Gallagher opened the way and players like Gallagher opened the way for Caulfield. But, you know, I think in 2010, Cole Caulfield probably would have been a second or third round pick.
But it's also like, I mean, however much we love Brendan Gallagher, he's always been like slightly below, like he has been on a very, very high NHL level, but like slightly below the top, really top end players who are the ones that kind of carry you to the playoffs and beyond. With guys like Caulfield and Suzuki, it feels like they are that top tier. They have the potential of becoming that top tier player who actually can carry their team on a bad year, the way that we have talked about guys like Carey Price in the past. Carey Price has always been that guy for the Canadians who you've talked about. Well, you know, any given year, like you can trot out basically whoever, and as long as you have Price, you are basically going to be in the top four of your division. And that is kind of what we're talking about with the potential of Suzuki and Caulfield as a tandem and you know, just as prospects. That would be it would be terrific to just see like what you can build around them, because obviously they will need help as well, but it's just like to have that potential star power would be terrific.
Well, they have options now too. I mean, those two developed chemistry so quick, right? Caulfield was not there all year. He comes in out of Wisconsin, immediately develops chemistry with Suzuki, and now they've got some options, right? I don't know who I want to see on the other side. I think it comes down to two people. I think it comes down to Mike Hoffman or Tyler Toffoli. I lean towards Tyler Toffoli because he was on an over 40 goal pace last year. At one point, he was on pace for 50 in a regular 82 game season. He's putting the puck in the net like no tomorrow. And Suzuki is a natural playmaker, right? We know he has a good shot. We know he can score. He showed what he can do. Anton, like you mentioned on the power play, finding his spot and getting those shots off. I think you want to give him another goal scorer. So you're going to give him Caulfield. That much is clear. You got to keep those two together for the season. You got to find out what can they develop. If they develop the chemistry that they did throughout the time that they had together last year, what are they going to do with a full 82 and a full training? Well, not a full training camp, not a normal length of training camp, but a pretty much a full training camp as well. They're only going to get better together. And if you stick them with, you know, Mike Hoffman or Tyler Toffoli, another guy with a good shot on the other side, that could be a ridiculously dangerous line all season long. And a lot of people are saying, you know, maybe the Habs are a bubble team. Well, you know what? The one thing that they were missing last year was a little bit more goal scoring. Now they have it.
Yeah. The only question is if they have lost too much, like just in other aspects of the game, because now they are like down defensemen and they're down, like, you don't know how the goaltender situation will be and the center depth, obviously. And like, it's a different situation, but yeah, they shouldn't lack in scoring power. They really shouldn't.
Yeah. You know, if you look at it this way, and the way I look at it is they added Christian Dvorak, who is very good on the power play. They added Mike Hoffman, who is very good on the power play. They took away Shea Weber, who in theory is good on the power play, but we haven't really seen that in the last few years. And so if those two guys and a full season of Cole Caulfield, let's not forget those three guys, Dvorak, Hoffman, full season of Caulfield, just those three guys alone, if you can add like 15 to 20 power play goals over a year, that's the difference between you know, fighting for fourth place in the North Division or whatever, the Canadian North Division last year. Obviously, the divisions are changed this year. But that's the difference between going out in, you know, being fourth and battling Toronto, Edmonton at the top. So, you know, yes, you know, they lose Philip Deneau. That line is, they're probably going to give up more goals without Deneau, without Weber. But I think that the way that the team is positioned, and obviously Nick Suzuki is a big part of that, is to outscore teams as opposed to trying to win games 2-1, you know, 3-2 even. You know, I think you might see a little bit more 4-3, 5-4 games, and the goaltending is going to play a big part in that as well. But if you get the thing about Suzuki and Cole Caulfield is that they don't need many chances to get goals, right? Like, look at the game against Vegas, game 3. 38 seconds after Vegas makes it 1-0, they're out shooting the Canadiens 22-4. Suzuki gets the loose puck, finds Caulfield in the back of the net on their third shot of the game. And that was a huge goal. Obviously, the game went to overtime. I believe that was the Marc-Andre Fleury game, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's what game that was. But still, you tie the game 38 seconds after Vegas takes the lead and is out shooting you 22-5. That's a huge step. So, yeah, I think that Suzuki is going to have an opportunity this year. And you mentioned the guys they lose. If you get a little bit more from Suzuki, if Dvorak can do a little bit more offensively than Deneau did, and I think that that's pretty, you know, not a huge ask at this point. You get, you know, whoever Ryan Poehling or Jake Evans or whoever is that third line center playing with guys like Jonathan Drouin and, say, I don't know, Josh Anderson or Mike Hoffman or who am I, forget, Brendan Gallagher. There's you know, even if you have Toffoli and Caulfield on that line, you still have, you know, Lehkonen, Byron, Armia, Anderson, Drouin, Hoffman, Gallagher. Like, that's that, Perot, that, even like
th- yeah, those are... that was exactly what I was gonna say as well. Like, I'm looking most forward to what the other players can do when most of the focus go to Caulfield and Suzuki, because aren't bad players. Like, a few years ago, like, guys like Toffoli, Anderson, Hoffman, of course, like, they would have been like first line candidates. Now they obviously maybe will be in the rotation for playing first line, but they're not as important. And that, I think, like, speaking of what Jonathan Drouin opened up about his issues as well and coming back now, I think it's just great for him to be kind of in the shadows as well and not having that pressure on him that he's going to be the unsung hero. He's going to be the one who carries the team. Like, all these guys can just, like, kind of, these young guys go just on a youthful instinct, and then the other older guys can just trot out behind them and just, like, you know, take care of the secondary power play and just, you know, just playing against third line opponents. It will be it will be fascinating to see what the whole team can do.
And I mean, you don't have Deneau to carry workload defensively anymore, so it, like, Suzuki's gonna have to eat some of those minutes, right? Dvorak's gonna have to eat some of those minutes that would normally be reserved for Philip Deneau, right? But if I look at this lineup overall, like you guys were talking about, the scoring ability, if you gave me the choice to, like, rewind to the Stanley Cup final and I get this lineup instead of the one we had, with the benefit of hindsight, I'm taking this lineup because I think it has a better chance against Tampa. Now, if you have to go all the way back to the beginning of the playoffs and get there, it might be harder because Deneau had such a big part in shutting down a lot of the stars that they went up against. But if I look at what they've got now, I think they would have hypothetically a better chance against Tampa specifically because, you know, now you got a lot more scoring power. Hypothetically. So I think the key is figuring out how to kind of spread out that role that Deneau used to have, because it would be a mistake to go to Nick Suzuki and be like, all right, well, we're going to carbon copy what Philip Deneau used to do, and we're going to have you do that. That would be a mistake, right? You're taking him away from what he really does well. And I do think he's underrated defensively. He made a lot of plays last year. He's really good at cutting off passes. He's really good at anticipating where the puck's going to go and kind of get in there and cut it off. And then you have when Cole Caulfield's out there, especially, it allows him to go and turn around and say, well, where's Cole? And you could bet Cole Caulfield's probably motoring for the other zone already looking for a pass. So there's a lot that he can do defensively. And I think he can definitely take some of those minutes, but if they can spread him out right if they can figure out how to play their matchups properly throughout the course of the season, I think, honestly, there's an argument to say that this lineup is better now than it was last year.
Like, it depends on the coaching as well. We haven't seen what a Duchamp-led team can do with a full offseason. We don't know how much Duchamp had to do with the playoff run or how much it was actually due to the players just basically taking charge. But we saw that it went pretty well even when Duchamp was gone due to COVID. So it will just be interesting because, like, in the past, when we had Claude Julien as the head coach, everyone was speaking highly of Duchamp as the, you know, players coach and just individual training and just helping them to, I remember especially Jonathan Drouin talking a lot about like video analysis and just like knowing, learning from Duchamp what he can do better on the ice and how he can maximize his potential that way. So let's just hope that Duchamp continues to do what he used to do well as an assistant coach for the Canadiens and does that in more, you know, as a head coach as well. Because if he can, you know, iron out a few of the mistakes we saw last year from the Julien-led team and the Duchamp-led team, there could be potential for something good here.
Yeah, to Matt's point about spreading out the minutes, I mean, they have a perfect team to do that, right? Like, Jake Evans can take some defensive minutes, you know, more than Eric Staal could, and definitely more than Jesper Kotkaniemi could. Christian Dvorak is not Philip Deneau, but he can do what Philip Deneau did, at least in part. And, maybe he's not going to dominate possession, but he's definitely, you know, going to be able to keep the puck out of your net or at least take those minutes. And, you know, Suzuki as well, you know, he plays on the penalty kill. It's not like he's just an offensive player. He's always been a two-way player throughout his career. And what's really interesting, you mentioned Ducharme, is that this team is not really built to play Claude Julien hockey anymore, no. Right? Like, the defense, with all due respect to the defense, you're not going to, you know, shut teams out with a defense that has Edmondson, Petrie, Sherratt, Savard, and then, you know, Romanov, Kulak, Weidman, Norlander, whatever grouping of, you know, defensemen you want to, whatever order you want to put them in. That's not really a recipe. You don't get guys like Jonathan Drouin and Josh Anderson and Mike Hoffman and be like, let's try and win this game 1-0. Because you're going to fail. Right?
I was going to say that. And maybe that's Mark Bergevin's thinking as well. He knows that, you know, we can't rely on Shea Weber anymore. And, you know, these guys are getting up there in age. So we just get really big defensemen. Because if we can't defend, at least they can cover a lot of shots just by being big. So they will just stand in the way of a lot of things. It certainly seems like they have asked for more firepower up front, because that's where all the assets, most of the resources have gone in the last few windows of transfers.
Yeah, it's going to be like, this training camp is going to be fascinating for me. Like, I just think that there's so many different combinations, and it's going to be very interesting to see how they think the team is going to look right away. And you know, obviously Nick Suzuki, Cole Caulfield both make this much easier than they would have. I'm going to go off the board. We weren't really planning to discuss this, but I am curious. Christian Dvorak is 25, so he's a few months too old to be part of this ranking. Where would you put him?
Three.
If you had to rank him?
Three.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Yeah.
He's basically replacing Kotkaniemi, right?
Yeah. Like, that's yeah. But the question is, like, yeah, no, I would absolutely take him at three. I think he has lower ceiling potential. He's 25, so like, even if he was 24, I would say that he's pretty much you know what you're going to get out of the player at this point. And I feel like right now, I think he has established himself more as, and like, he is a middle six center. You could argue that he's a second line center, but that's a more proven NHLer than... we have Alexander Romanov in third place now, and we don't know if he's going to be a top four defenseman. We hope so, but it's not a given. And I wouldn't therefore have Dvorak be before him, but I would say that his ceiling is lower than Suzuki's and Caulfield's.
I'd have to agree with you. I would have him at three. I would still have him at three, even if Kotkaniemi was still on the roster. I would rank him ahead of Kotkaniemi because I think right now he's a better player. I mean, if you look at potential, there's a possibility that Kotkaniemi is going to be a better player than him. But I don't think that's the case right now. I mean, Dvorak had a pretty good year last year on a bad Coyotes team. So that for me is worth something because I think, you know, you move him over to the Habs, he's going to get probably better minutes. Well, I don't know about better minutes, but definitely I think he's going to have better line mates than he had in Arizona. I mean, as it stands, if I were to project a lineup, Nick Deschamps, my top six looks like this. It looks like Nick Suzuki with Cole Caulfield and Tyler Toffoli. And then my second line, Christian Dvorak now gets to come in and be on a second line. And he gets Mike Hoffman and Brendan Gallagher. Coming out of Arizona, coming into that in Montreal, I'm licking my chops if I'm Christian Dvorak. I'm thinking I'm going to have a good time with this because that's also probably going to be the same unit that I'm going to be on for the power play as well. We know Christian Dvorak is good at the power play, so we know we're putting him there. Now you have a net front guy in Brendan Gallagher who you know loves to be there and definitely can bang in some of your rebounds. You're going to get some easy points just from him being in front of the net and cleaning up your rebounds for you. And then you have Mike Hoffman, who, you know, he's a sniper. That's what he does. He shoots. Dvorak's going to have a fun time with those two guys. This is my projection. That's what I would do with my top six. I don't know if that's what they're going to do. That's what I'm looking for in camp. I'm hoping that I see that in camp. Like you said, Jared, it's going to be fascinating this year in camp to see what they do because there is a lot of combinations. But for me, for my money, that's what I'm doing.
If you were to do as you said, Matt, then you would have Josh Anderson and Jonathan Drouin playing on a third line.
Yeah, Ryan Poehling.
Yeah.
I
think that's fine, to be honest.
Whether or not
exploitation line.
Yeah, and whether or not Poehling makes the team out of camp is actually an interesting conversation to be had because they also went out and got Cédric Paquette and they got Mathieu Perrault. So there's like a lot of guys who hypothetically can play center. I know Perrault is more of a winger, but like there's a lot of guys kind of vying for that final center spot. So then it becomes a question. Do you bump Jake Evans up and make him the third line center? Does Jake Evans play with Drouin and Anderson? I mean, I don't know because Jake Evans is more defensive. I don't know if you want to give him Drouin because Drouin, you know, for how good of a player he is, he's not exactly known for his defense.
I was going to say, isn't it the same for Anderson? He's kind of like all power, all speed in both directions, but
what I would do, and I don't know if this will work necessarily, but when healthy, put like Drouin, Poehling, Armia, and then that would give you Lehkonen or Byron with Evans and Anderson. And you know, if you're up a goal and you're defending, then obviously you can switch that around. You can put Gallagher with Evans, right? I mean, we know Gallagher can play that kind of style. He did it with Philip Deneau. So I think that it's a very fluid situation. But I think that, you know, you want to obviously have chemistry, but I think that it's definitely flexible. And that's what's fun about this, right? Like if healthy, and I know Paul Byron's going to miss the start of camp, but like Paul Byron and Mathieu Perrault on your fifth line is pretty remarkable because I see Mathieu Perrault as an upgrade on Corey Perry, to be quite honest, just in terms of everything he can do. Obviously, Corey Perry on the power play, whatever, but then you have Dvorak for that now, right? Like Dvorak plays in that front. That's where Perry was. So, you know, I think that overall, even strength, Perrault is an upgrade on Perry. Not that I wouldn't want to see Corey Perry on this team, but I think that, you know, apples to apples, that's a better player. So it's going to be fascinating, right? And you mentioned Paquette, you know, they have a bunch of, you know, we didn't even mention Jesse Ullinen, and there's a lot to mention about that, but we won't get into that right now. Laurent Dauphin, Alex Belzile, like the Canadians have depth, right? Like they have,
I was going to say Harvey Pinard.
Yeah, Harvey Pinard, you know, so many guys that can, you know, come up and play, you know, minutes for the Canadians in a pinch, and that are probably better than they would have had a year ago. So what's really going to be interesting to me going into camp is A, people stay healthy. That's obviously a big thing, but I'm curious how they're going to do this. I think that you can either go for balance for all four lines, but I'm curious to see what they do because you know what I'm looking forward to on this team is seeing Brendan Gallagher play offensively and kind of not having that shutdown role. And if you put it with a guy like Mike Hoffman, it's that's an interesting line to me, because I think that Gallagher has kind of been reined in a little bit. You know, obviously that line's been great. I don't want to take anything away from Thomas Tatar, take nothing away from Philip Deneau, but Brendan Gallagher playing with a more offensive role would be interesting. But yeah, there's so many options, and that's what's great is like we talked about off the top about how, you know, it's been a while since Canadians have had a bona fide number one offensive line. And, you know, going back to the days of Pacioretty, now teams can defend. If they defend their top defensive pairing, their top shutdown line against Suzuki and Caulfield, as an example, then that frees up Drouin and Hoffman and Gallagher and those guys. And it adds layers to how you have to play against them, similar to how teams have to face Tampa, right? Like Braden Point, Kucherov, that's who you're going to shut down. But then you have Sorelli and Joseph and Stamkos and, you know, Killorn and all those guys, right? Like they're not, you wouldn't want to shut down Alex Killorn and Steven Stamkos in 2021. But when you have to shut down Point and Kucherov, that opens up off other opportunities. And the question will be, and how successful the Canadians will be this season, will be how Suzuki deals with that. Because we started to see how he was going to, like, teams started to do that against Montreal. They started to try and shut him down and avoid the Deneau matchup, because I think that was, they started to see, you know, how that was going to go for them. And it wasn't well, is how it went for them. But I think that it'll be interesting to see how they do it and how teams attack the Montreal Canadiens, because there's no, other than the defense, which we mentioned is kind of, you know, I don't want to say bad, but it's iffy. But it was again last year, right? Like, you know, we're talking about a Stanley Cup final appearance with Eric Gustafson and John Merrill, right? Like, it was iffy last year. But, you know, it's going to be, I'm curious. Like, I'm cautiously optimistic about this Canadiens team, because it's going to be interesting. Like, they're not going to lose 1-0 or 2-1.
And also what you're saying, they're cautiously optimistic, because 1 year ago, expectations were sky high because of the acquisitions in the preseason. Like, you know, acquisitions of Josh Anderson, Tyler Toffoli, and we're talking about the depth and also like depth. Oh, you have guys like Michael Frolik and Corey Perry as your 13th, 14th forwards. And how was it a year ago? It was Alex Belzile coming into like Philadelphia and playing playoff games.
Dale Weiss.
Yeah, Dale Weiss. Exactly. So then expectations were high because we were going to play in a Northern Division and it was going to be like, you know, obviously this team is going to make the playoffs. If they don't make the playoffs, Julian is going to get fired and Bergevin is going to get canned and all that, and they will have to reboot. But now they are coming off a play at like a Stanley Cup final, and everyone is kind of
where Julian got fired.
Yeah, exactly. And no one is talking about the Canadians at all, because everyone's kind of like, yeah, Canadians, bubble team, maybe. They're probably going to miss the playoffs because their division is too hard and they miss, like, Shea Weber is out and Carey Price is out.
And yeah, like, it's weird because, like you said, I would take this roster over what they started last year with.
Yes.
But at the same time, it's...
But like, is that due? Like, I'm going to ask you a question. Is that due to the newfound chemistry with Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield that we are optimistic? Because of that chemistry, do we look more optimistic towards the season?
It's weird, though. Like, I think about, like, oh, man, they don't have Deneau. They don't have Weber. But at the same time, I'm like, they can score now. So I think it's just going to be like, There's definitely problems with this team. Don't get me wrong. And they're definitely in a tougher division. But at the same time, I don't know if I can really justify saying that they're worse than last year, because I don't think they are. And they're not even worse than they were 3 weeks ago. Right? Like, I feel like they're better with Dvorak than Kotkaniemi this season and potentially long-term, but especially this season. So I think the big question for me, if I have to say one thing about this team right now, or I guess two things, is, okay, three things, because I'm thinking about things. First thing is, who's going to be that third line center? And if it's Jake Evans, who's going to be your fourth line center? They need somebody to step up, whether it's Paling, whether it's Cedric Paquette, whether it's someone like Laurent Domfait, Lucas Vedemo, we didn't even mention Lucas Vedemo, so someone like that, right? So somebody has to step up in that role. Because you, if you figure Suzuki and Dvorak are Suzuki and Deno from last year, then you need someone to step up and be Kotkaniemi, whoever that is, whether it's Evans or Paling. And then you need someone to fill in where Evans or Eric Staal were, right? So that's my first question about this team. The wingers are better, but I still want to know who's going to be that the third and fourth centers on this team. The second thing is to make sure that the defense can get it together, right? Because if it's Kulak and Romanov and Savard and Chiarot, they're not bad. They have options there. Weidman as well. Norlander is an option. Someone needs to step up into that role. If they get people to step up and play well and deserve, and that competition breeds someone better, then they can replace Weber by committee. Because let's face it, Weber wasn't all that great all season long, right? We were talking about how he was struggling and things like that. So it's not an insurmountable loss, but they need somebody to step up a little bit. Everyone needs to step up a little bit. And the third thing, and probably the most obvious thing, is goaltending, right? Last year, Carey Price, when he wasn't good, Jake Allen was good. That's hopefully for the Canadians going to be the recipe this year, but it's still a question mark. And I'm not expecting Carey Price to be playoff Carey Price for the entire season, but if he can be good and Jake Allen could be good as a backup, then that's okay. But they can't be bad. So those are the three question marks I have. You can go through every team in the division, except maybe Tampa, and say that they also have questions, right? Boston isn't what they used to be. Toronto, we've seen what their issues are. You know, their depth is still a question mark. And you can argue it maybe is a little bit worse than it was last year without Zach Hyman. Florida, good team, question marks, especially who's going to be their goalie. And is it Sergei Bobrovsky? It probably won't be, but, Spencer Knight, again, question marks. There's questions throughout the division. Buffalo, Ottawa, Detroit, obviously probably going to be worse than Montreal, but still, they can surprise, especially Ottawa out of that group. I don't think Detroit and Buffalo are going to surprise anybody. But there's questions there, but there's a path. And I feel like I did before the playoffs started, right? Montreal was the underdog in going into the playoffs. And Matt, you wrote about this. But there was a way to beat Toronto if things fell into place. And if things fall into place, the Canadians can be a good team. They can be, maybe even near closer to the top than the bottom of the division. But there's not a lot of leeway. And I think that's where I'm sitting right now as we talk today.
Yeah, I can't really disagree with anything that you just said. But I want to go back to Anton's question real quick. Is my optimism linked to that chemistry between Suzuki and Caulfield? Absolutely. 100,000%. It's almost directly. Like there's other things too, right? I do agree. Dvorak, yeah, absolutely. I think we're better off with him. I think the defense, honestly, on paper, looks a little bit better to me than what we had last season, even without Weber. I think we can replace Blake. So I agree with everything you just said, but absolutely, a lot of my optimism is directly linked to that chemistry, because what we saw from them was how many regular season games did Caulfield play? 10? And some of them weren't with, some of them he wasn't even with Suzuki. They didn't put those two together.
Only one.
Yeah, they didn't put them together until towards the end, and then they did it in the playoffs, right? So when Caulfield came in against the Leafs, they put him with Suzuki, if I recall correctly. And they kept him together during the duration of the playoffs. So we're talking about a very small sample size. And in that sample size, they crushed it. They crushed it when the games matter the most against really good teams. So if you can do that with very little time together, and Caulfield's brand new in the league, that wasn't even his rookie season. This is his rookie season coming up this season. That's how little he actually played. And if they can do that in the playoffs, creating and fostering this unlikely run, like Carey Price's, I wrote this in Suzuki's profile, Carey Price's fingerprints were all over that unlikely cup finals run, but Suzuki was really one of the guys that drove them there offensively, and Caulfield was a big part of his ability to drive them there offensively. So the fact that they did that in that little time, to me, it inspires all this confidence, because it's like, now teams are going to have to game plan that. And if they don't game plan it at the start of the season, they're going to start game planning it once they realize what those two can do together. And then once they start doing that, as we talked about before, it's going to open up tons of stuff for the rest of the lineup. If you're game planning constantly to try to take them out of the equation, there's plenty of other guys that can hurt you down the lineup at this point. They're a little bit deeper on the wing than I would like versus center, which last year, you know, it was the opposite, right? We were deep down the middle and not as deep on the wing. So, you know, you take one thing away and something else gets worse. But at the end of the day, that chemistry between those two is going to open up so much for the rest of the lineup, because I guarantee if they're even close to as good as I'm imagining them in my head with a camp together and a legitimate 82 game season, then like this team's going to be dangerous. Like we said, they're probably not going to win games, you know, 1-0. We're probably talking about a lot of 4-3, 5-4 games, but it's going to be a fun team.
That would be so much fun to write the recaps for those games. So eventful, yeah. You know, there will always be stuff happening. There were some games this season where it was just like, you know, yeah, it was just 0-0 or 1-1, 1-0 after two periods. And we're just like, yeah, well, it's 3 a.m. here in Sweden.
And no fans in the stands either.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're not getting those.
Game-breaking talent. That's what Suzuki and Caulfield bring. And how far the Canadians go will be if they can do what they did in the playoffs, is that other teams are like, we're going to try and stop you. And they're so good that they say, no, you're not. And that's something that's been missing with these Canadians teams is having somebody when you're down a goal, when you need a goal, to be like, we're going to put you on the ice and we're going to score. And if Suzuki and Caulfield, look, they're still young, right? Suzuki's what, 21? Caulfield is 20. Like, they're still young players, but at the same time, if they can take that step, how quickly they can take that step will basically show us how long the Canadians will take to get back to being a contender. And if it's this year, great. but if it's not, that doesn't mean they're not going to get there. But it's going to be interesting to see how they face these top talents.
Yeah. And again, I think that combination is going to be wild. I mean, this is another thing. I had arguments about this in our Slack chat with David Saint-Louis, and I said it in the article about Suzuki. I'm going to say it now on the podcast. I believe Nick Suzuki, during his career with the Montreal Canadiens, is going to have a 90-plus point season. And I believe that he will do that with Cole Caulfield on his wing. That's when I watched them in the playoffs last year, the things that they were able to do, like you already brought up that goal in game 6 against Vegas, right? Where Caulfield does, like, first of all, beautiful pass to get it to Caulfield in the first place. Second of all, him chipping it like that, knowing that he's going to be able to get around the defender and then going roof. That shows how in a split second they can change the game. Like you said, that game-breaking ability, they have that, right? So for me, Nick Suzuki is going to have a 90-plus point season with the Montreal Canadiens, and Cole Caulfield is going to be a big part of that. I don't know how many goals he's going to score, probably more than 40. In order to get Suzuki over 90, but I'm predicting that will happen. I'm speaking it into existence.
Well, we know. Trevor Zegras said that Cole Caulfield is going to score 40 goals this year.
Yeah, Zegras said he's going to do it, and we know they're friends. But I mean, I honestly, and I don't want to predict this one because I don't want to put that on him. I'm sure Cole Caulfield doesn't listen to this podcast, but if he does, Cole, I don't want to put that on you. But I could see it. I could see him scoring 40 goals. I honestly could.
Yeah.
What pace was he on? I think he scored 4 goals in 10 games in the regular season, right? And those were his first 10 games. So come on, let's admit that he's going to do probably better than that. But 4 goals in 10 games over 82 translates to 32-33.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to, look, you don't get to 90 points, you don't get to 40 goals if the power play isn't working. And I think that's a big thing, is that the Montreal Canadiens for years now, we can say that for years, have struggled on the power play. You know, they were a little bit better last year, but still not great. But, you know, at least now, and somebody, I forget which one of you mentioned it earlier, but, you know, the second unit won't be the power kill anymore, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's not going to be like, you know, Armia and Lekkonen and not Lekkonen, but Armia, Danault. And, you know, I don't even remember what they had on there. But yeah, that second unit was iffy at times. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. Look, Suzuki is going to we're going to have this debate probably 3 more times in this ranking. It's kind of hard to say how one's going to pass the other, because I feel like they're going to be linked for the next few years. But yeah, Nick Suzuki, number one for the second straight year. And we're going to start talking about training camp and things like that very soon, as we're recording this on Tuesday night. When you listen to this on Wednesday, training camp starts. And yes, it's medicals and things like that, so it's not, you know, practicing. But there's a game on Saturday, guys. There's a game on Saturday.
There is.
It's preseason hockey.
Woo!
But at the same time,
it was a long time ago.
It's been a long time since preseason hockey. Yeah. I mean, the last exhibition game was like the game against Toronto before the bubble, which was awful. It was an awful game.
Yeah.
But it'll be fun to see the battles and the chemistry form, and how Dominic Ducharme enters his first full season as head coach, because we can't discount that. I don't think that Dominic Ducharme put his stamp on the Canadiens yet. And I think he kind of just, you know, had to rush things together after not having any practices. But it'll be very interesting to see. Obviously, Trevor Letowski, in addition to the bench, Alex Burrows, a full offseason to work on that. I'm intrigued. This Canadiens team will be interesting. And interesting is good, because there's things to write about. And writing about things is good, because that's what we do at Eyes on the Prize. And when we write about good things, we get to talk about good things. And that's where Habs and Mining comes in. Thank you for listening. Anton, Matt, thank you for joining me. And we'll see you next time when we have actual hockey to talk about on Habs and Mining.
At Vanguard, you're more than just an investor. You're an owner. That means your priorities are Vanguard's too. So whether you're planning for retirement or trying to save up for your next big adventure, Vanguard will work alongside you to set personalized investment goals. That's the value of ownership. All investing is subject to risk. Vanguard is owned by its funds, which are owned by Vanguard's fund shareholder clients. Vanguard Marketing Corporation Distributor.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. If approved, applications are typically funded the next business day or sooner. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.